folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. A Danny Bird, how's she dangling?
Well, I'm standing out here. Actually, I'm sitting in my truck on a big, giant frozen block of ice, so it could be better.
It could be worse. You could be Jay, who's apparently... Yeah? Jay's not with us because he had a... I'm guessing when you sent him that prototype 3D gerbil is what the cause of this is. It was like you sent him... Maybe that had something to do with it.
So, oh, man. So I'm the fill-in.
You're the fill-in. Here we are. The son of a dick, as we call him. Danny's living the dream. It is freaking... Apparently, winter's still here. You know, you get this freaking little glimpse. A week ago, I'm out creeking with Dr. Bob in a pair of shorts, you know, fishing out of fishing in skinny water, and it feels like summer. And I got an inch of sleet at my house right now. You don't want to hear this. You just live in a Canadian hellscape right now. But, you know.
Yeah, it's very much winter up here still. We haven't had any little warm spell, any little reprieve. I mean, we're out fishing currently right now. I just stepped into the truck to do this with you. We're sitting on 40 inches of ice here still right now. So we're in winter mode.
Winter mode. I mean, do you remember what last year was like? Was it a little bit easier? Do you recall?
Yes, I've been, like, the other day I was sitting there and I actually looked back through my history of my pictures. And for the last 3 years, by this date, like, we had no snow on the lakes, very little snow if there was any. And, like, right now, if this wasn't an ice road I was sitting on, I mean, there's 16, 17 inches of snow and slush. Whoa. So, I mean, we're way behind. We're probably a good 3 weeks behind what we have been the last 3 or 4 years. Now, this is more of a normal winter up here, I would call it.
Yeah, like realistic winter, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, who knows? Like, you see it now. The weather is so up and so down. Like, these hot spells and cool downs are so dramatic now. There is no such thing as a normal spring anymore, it seems like.
No, this has been just drastic. And then, you know, with I guess, the Northwoods, I talked to your old man. I guess they're expecting, like, 30 inches of snow. Which is just, come on.
Yeah.
So the last little insulting bit of winter
Jay's up to his nuts in snow in northern Wisconsin right now. I can tell you that much.
Hunker down, boys. It's a coming. So, yeah, it's ridiculous. I'll tell you, I don't know. I think I tried calling you. Just, you want to talk about it? I figured, why not give Danny the call here? I just spent the whole weekend there at the Bassmaster Classic, Danny. Craziness.
I can't believe a musky guy is dealing with bass fishermen.
Slumming it up. I think I sent you a picture the other night hanging out with some folks doing the do.
So that is one cool thing, though. I mean, what people don't realize is, you know, as a musky angler, you know, we kind of get stuck in a rut. And these bass guys, they're always innovative on different new techniques. And a lot of that stuff, if a guy really pays attention, you know, a lot of it can correlate over to musky fishing. You know, you got to get a little creative. And, you know, the stuff they're using, we have to upscale it and stuff like that. But, you know, a lot of the stuff that the bass are eating, the muskies will eat too. So it gives it kind of gets the guy's creative juices flowing as, you know, a bait designer, a bait maker, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. It was crazy. And, you know, getting to hang with some, obviously, me and Rick Klun were there at the Livingston booth working that guy together, hanging out all day. I had on a jersey, Danny. I have a jersey. How lame is that?
What's the world coming to?
It's got my name on the back. All four letters. I felt like a moron. But, no, it was cool. I appreciate everybody that came by the booth. It's so shocking. amount of musky guys ended up coming out to the booth. So I appreciate you guys coming out and visit and saying hi. That was fun. It was just a neat little thing there. And yes, I got to say something. Self-serving here. Multiple people that came to the booth asked if there's no like professional musky fishing. I am, yes, still a guide. So people were like, what are you like? I wish Danny, do you live solely off Savage gear as well? Right. I'm like, no, dude, I'm still a guide. I'm just Steve. Please call me.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of,
let's face it, as a fishing guide, if we don't have some sort of other side hustle, we're eating peanut butter and crackers all winter.
Well, I sell more baits than that. I don't know how life is at Savage Gear, but anyway, over there with your three D rat boy or whatever. But no, I appreciate everybody coming out. I did actually. Of all things, Danny, I was walking around. Your parent company was over there. Saw the Scandals in person there on the bass size.
So oh, yeah.
That's cool. They've got the bassy versions of that, but that thing's dynamite. But, no, it was a trip, man. I really enjoy, you know, being at some show like that is just, it's a trip. But I appreciate everybody that came out and said hello. And you know, next time I promise you, because there's some people that were there yesterday, we'll bring more musky baits. We didn't expect that people would care. But, dude, here's the freaky thing. Flat out, when you look at these bass shows, at the custom swim baits, they call them, we would call it a good segment and glider like the Scandal. There's people selling 15-inch versions, Danny. It's ridiculous.
Oh, I know.
You can walk in there and buy yourself a 15-inch bull shad or the giant, what was it, KGB?
And also pay an outrageous amount.
Yeah, I mean, it was, like, scary. I think the average one, so, like, when I was sitting in the Livingston booth, I know in my proximity, kind of in the area that we were, I know of four of them. And I wasn't walking around the whole show. I don't like crowds and I don't like people. So I kind of hid behind the wall as many times as I could. But, you know, walking around just that room, there were four booths in there that was like the baseline price was like $100. Like, I think it was like $100, $120 for like, here's the baseline model going up, you know, $180, $200. I saw some 300s. Which is freaky, and I think it's funny on the bass front, sitting here going, you guys are losing your minds over baits we've had better versions of now for a few years. You know, whether it be like Shine Glide, you know, with I think the Shine Glide and the Viper from Livingston are better than like bull shads. I've thrown them all, and I'm sitting here going, this is a joke. So
that's they're a lot, I mean... Let's face it, like with baits out there now, a lot of it, there's just as good a baits on the market. It's just like anything in the world. A lot of this stuff, it's all hype and you're paying for the name just as much so as you're paying for the actual product, you know, and that's all, you know, a lot of people like to, you know, think that the name's going to catch more fish than the actual bait itself, you know.
I did see a Marabou jig that was $5 for crappie. I was like, whoa, that's per jig, everybody. That's per jig if you want the best Marabou jigs. But yeah, that was kind of freaky. But yeah, neat experience there. And yet again, all you guys that came out and said hello, I appreciate that. So yeah, Danny, you need to suffer through these things, buddy. They need you there.
Yeah, I you know, back when my dad had the camp, that was, you know, in the heyday of the sport shows and stuff like that. And I do miss going to them. You know, now I'm kind of stuck up here in Canada all winter. I do miss going to them and, you know, seeing a lot of the people and that you don't necessarily get to see. And they do get, you know, long and, you know, pretty strenuous at times, but I mean, it is cool to, you know, get out and see a lot of the people and, you know, rub shoulders with a lot of the people that you don't get to see on a yearly basis. I do miss that part of it.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. I think I'll tell you the freakiest part of that whole experience for me. I was hanging out and we're just kind of killing time in the evening and got to spend like half an hour with like Roland Martin. you know, and you go, how cool is that? You know, and talk fishing, yeah. Or, you know, when you're kind of more behind the scenes and stuff, and or you know, all the that, and then get to see familiar faces, which is like,
well, until more, you get, you know, you only, you know, like a lot of people, they see Roland Martin of like his tournament days, you know, and his TV days and stuff like that, but at the end of the day, he's just a normal fishing dude. You know what I mean? Yeah. And to see that side of him, you know, that side of a person is really cool, you know?
I'll tell you, on that front, when we were, because we have a mutual friend, right? So it was like him and KVD and me hanging there for a bit, and we were just away from all the people. And, you know, you don't want to talk fishing, but we kind of got talking fishing because obviously with the Classic there and talking, you know, just it's amazing sometimes. I mean, it wasn't that I had an epiphany, but kind of like a affirmation talking to him about forage movement. You go, okay, you got your thoughts right. And, you know, sometimes that's a really powerful. And anyway, moving on to that, the comings and the goings at the Muskie Shop, Danny, what products have you brought in this week? You got to do Jay's job here. Guess.
I got no products.
Products. So anyway,
what's on sale?
Wait, nothing on sale, but we got obviously just a teeny tiny smattering of critters, and they had a couple left at Livingston. That's just been a nightmare for stocking everything. So I appreciate everybody that hooked up on those. So you got critter. People are freaking over Banshee. Those will be here sooner than later. So we'll let you know on that. Those went ridiculously fast. So if you didn't get what you wanted, or you want something, when those come back in, there's a restock sign up on those. Other than that, you got a couple new Mustang collars, and we got, what does it look like here? It looks like Old Lee Lures came out with 8.5 Death Paws Minnow. So what is this? Jay would know, but don't pretend. The Death Paws just does it.
Death Paws Minnow is a crankbait.
So this is a
metal lip crankbait.
8.5 inches, $89.99, handcrafted by Lee.
They're actually really. I've thrown them. They're a really good crankbait. They do a lot of really nice side to side action. They remind me of like a giant X-Wrap in the water. If you want to compare it to a crankbait that everybody's kind of thrown and known.
To me, it's like that body style too. Of like you have X-Wrap. And then that's almost a take off of Daiichi, and then a take off of the Megabass Vision, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you want to bait nerd out everybody, and then at Livingston we have the Jerkmaster, and it's funny with that.
Yeah, very similar. Yeah, very similar to the Jerkmaster.
Yeah, and as far as like a pool pulse twitch, as far as like your bass size bait, there is a big version of Livingston of the Jerkmaster that kind of gets forgotten. But yeah, that's a cool bait. And like you said, metal lip. When you were throwing them, were you banging them, just banging hang, or what are you doing with that thing?
Yeah, I mean, you could get, you know, a lot of, one thing nice about having a metal lip on a crankbait is you can get aggressive around rocks. You don't have to worry about snapping bills off, right? So that was one thing. But I mean, I'm generally like, when I did throw it, that Lee Lures, I mean, it's more just twitch, twitch, pause, mm-hmm. twitch, 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 pause, twitch, pause, you know, real erratic, mm-hmm. nothing, you know, the same, not getting into the same, you know, lulling cadence, right?
Right.
Trying to get as aggressive and erratic with it as possible. And, well, you always make fun of me how I work baits, but that, you know, hard and fast.
Boys, they call him the jackhammer on the water and at home. Yep. He's got one move.
Yep.
So other than that, we got some big cat Viper Halo sand cats. So Tom LeBeau over there doing more custom work. Have you ever looked at his stuff, Danny? The big fork lures?
Yes, I have. I've thrown, what's the jointed metal lipped one?
That's the bait we don't talk about. No one needs to know that.
That's the one I have thrown of the big fork stuff. Reef digger.
I catch on that thing for dang sure. But so he's got this. He's done a. Danny can't see him right now. So imagine we've got Danny. Close your eyes. Envision this. Silver, shiny eyes. Kind of a tangerine bottom with neon green and a scale. You can see it in your mind's eye, can't you? It's beautiful. It's beautiful. So he's done this custom series on this paint job. It's so Tom does. It's crazy how good his paint work is, and it's like really, really custom. So I always give him accolades on that, because that is like the cleanest epoxy work, the cleanest paint jobs, and they look like they came out of a mass production factory. That's cool. Other than that, got some new hats. Danny, you need a hat.
I always need hats. You see where my hairline's going, so I need to cover my head.
Oh, buddy. That's, you listen. Sorry. Not all of us can have glorious hair like yours truly. Have you seen my hair?
Have a couple kids. You'll have a couple kids, and then we'll talk.
It's a little late in the game for that. Oh, good. That's the comings and the goings at the Muskie Shop. Other than that, I'll tell you, my phone, this time of year, you know, it's a lot of people are thinking Southern. A lot of people are getting, you know, getting geared up and kind of hitting it. So my overarching message this week is you better be willing to check shallow, and you better be willing to check mid, and you still better be willing to check deep with this amount of fluctuation. You know, so
yeah,
the amount of people that are texting me, hey, what do you know, or getting emails in the app. I have so many freaking emails. So I'm summarizing for you. So we don't have to answer them all. It's all the same thing. If you're doing this early season patterning, right, Danny? So imagine it's basically musky opener for you, right? Just jump ahead. You just had 60 degree water temps, kind of. Okay, we're getting there. We're getting nice. And now it's sleeting ice. That's where we're at right now. And it's going to take some adjustment. And I genuinely think, you know, extreme south here and then even into the mid south. I think, Danny, we had enough warm up there to kind of get some spawn kicked off. You know, it was.
Well, and, you know, one thing, too, if you do have flexibility down in the south, like, don't get, if the weather is pretty volatile and you're dealing with these big temperature swings, don't get hung up on fishing a lake.
Yeah.
Swing to a river.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where those fish have no opportunity to really get deep and get out away from a guy.
Yep.
Where, you know, they're more confined, right? So if you can get away from fishing, you know, a big impoundment, mm-hmm. go to where there's some current. And then, you know, just start pounding banks, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, get on those turns where you have a hole, you know, and fish that type of stuff. And, you know, that would be my pointer if I was down south and knowing just what I know of the fisheries down there.
I bet you wish you were down here right now, ice boy.
So. I got top and bottom long johns. I got two jackets on. I got bibs. I got insulated boots. I'm sitting in my truck right now, and it's actually pretty nice. But it's
tough.
I would love to be down there right now. Yeah.
You're spot on. I mean, last week, you know, Dr. Bob and I, he was down here, and it's like, okay, went and hit some lake stuff, and you're like, getting the looks, not getting the commitment. Going, where are they at, and kind of the. You know, because these are adjacent to spawning areas. Where are we at? I hate that game of are we pre, are we post, where are we at in the spawn, right? And it comes so rapidly sometimes here where you go, it's winter, winter, winter. Okay, 2 weeks of 70s. When's it going to happen? Everybody's going, when's it going to happen? It's like, it could be happening now. It might, you know, it's hard to pick that timing.
And two, not all the fish...
Yep.
Do the same thing at once too, right? So you're gonna have waves of fish. Exactly. You're gonna have, you know, you're gonna have some fish that are real eager to get it done. And then you're gonna have other fish that are like, well, you know, I can wait another week or two, you know?
If you were a muskie, which would you be of those two?
I'd probably be in and out.
In and out, eager to get it done, he says. Just get this done. I've been through this before. I know how it turned out. And then you go. So, yeah, I mean, that's so on point, though, because when you're dealing with these big reservoirs, I mean, you've got miles and miles and miles of lake, and you just have to admit there's, like, with a reservoir, I don't care how big it is, you know, you always end up with different populations, just like we're talking on Eagle, where you have different basins. You have, you know, I think during the season we get in this habit of going, they all spawn down there, which is, you know, you might have an area, let's say like Eagle, Niven, right? Or, you know, down past Century or whatever. Like where I'm at, there's certain areas you're like, okay, that's obvious.
The fish that are living in the shallower section are obviously going to be the first ones to go through the movement.
Right.
But then you're going to have fish that spend more time out on the bigger, deeper section that they're going to be behind the eight ball a little bit, right?
Yeah, they didn't get the memo. Didn't know it was time. They slept through it. Yeah. Okay. And they're just affected differently, and it's hard to calibrate. But to that point, that's why I'm doing, you know, this time of year. Literally last week, I'm in a freaking 12-foot pond prower with 6'9" rods, you know, hooking up. And
yeah,
there's something to be said quite often, you know, I don't care what time of year it is, obviously the proximity effect, where if your bait is not in the sphere of a muskie, if they can't see it and feel it, you're in deep doo-doo, which is, you know, skinny water. Even if it's a river that's 10 feet deep or 15 feet deep, you're better than fishing something where they have access to that 25, 30. You know, that makes a world of difference if you can kind of narrow that. Because, you know, at a certain point, it's not that. It's funny. I've always heard people say over the, excuse me, kidding, Grace, dying over here. But I've always had people say river muskies are more forgiving. And I don't think that it's the fish, that their mentality is different. I think this proximity is
different.
Well,
they're more, river muskies are way more opportunistic because of current, right? Yeah,
they have to
be. They gotta make up their mind now or it's gone.
Right. And it ain't coming back.
Yep.
It was funny, we were drifting so fast last week. Dr. Bob had me rolling. Like, Danny, I literally have a 40-pound thrust troller on the front, right? And I am, listen, not trying to brag, I might have a 3.5 engine I bought off of Amazon on the back, right? It's from Yadal, the company you can trust. It's like, just bought it on Amazon. I was like, man, if I want, why not, right? Threw that guy in the back. And you would have a fish follow in that was kind of hot. We can't even turn the rig around. You know what I'm saying? It would take everything you got to get back. It's like, what are you going to do? You ain't going to go back on moon. You know, you don't have freaking even the power to get back up on this fish. You better commit, or you better commit, which there's a lesson in there about making sure you're executing your eights, and even in skinny water, just being prepared all the time. But yeah, those fish, I mean, something's coming by that, you know, whether that's shallow structure they're using, or they're patrolling the edge of a pool, they'll pop off a little bit quicker. So other than that, Danny, before we get into a little bit of the Q's and A's here, right? What's going on with you and Coop? What's the big plan here? Promo? What can expect?
I spoke with Coop probably about a week and a half ago. We are getting ready to start up here shortly. We're actually going to get together and do a podcast here soon. The two of us. He's been going through some family stuff, so he's been kind of running around here, there, everywhere. So he's been kind of busy with that currently. But once he kind of gets over that, we're gonna record and kind of inform everybody what our long-term plan is of the summer. But as soon as the ice gets off, we'll start our normal weekly type deal and kind of keep everybody in the loop as to condition wise and what's going on up here in Canada, and kind of a little bit of a heads up what to expect before they come up anyway. So yeah, that's kind of the tentative plan.
Sweet. Listen, You guys were dishing out this. You were dishing out the good stuff last year. So now that's awesome. I appreciate you guys getting on that. All right, Danny, here it comes. Caleb, need help catching big girls or even small ones from the bank on my local stock muskie lake. I'm not going to burn the spot here, but he's in Iowa. It's notable for a ton of standing timber. It's basically a flooded forest. The center is pretty deep, but not accessible from the bank. He said he's dealing with serious wind, right? And so he's got wind, milfoil, timber. No pressure, though, right? So he's confined to the bank. He hasn't really connected yet. So we're dealing with a situation where we have high winds, we got timber, we got low pressure, and we know there's fish in there. What are we going to do from the bank? What are you thinking? You're the guest here. Crack away.
Bring a chainsaw and build a raft.
Bring a raft. You know, there's that. Pool floaty.
No, I mean, like, dealing with the bank like that, I mean, a lot of that type of stuff is going to be seasonality, right? Because mm-hmm. you're confined to just bank fishing. So, mm-hmm. I mean, unfortunately, you got to wait for those fish to come to you.
Right.
And, you know, like right now, that's probably not going to happen for a little while, at least in Iowa. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that game plan for that of we talk about, you know, checking mid, shallow, deep, checking all three levels. When you are bank fishing a reservoir, again, like you said, you're confined to, you have to have those fish in a shallow zone. They have to be accessible.
Or if that, you know, impoundment that he is fishing has a dam, that's where I was going.
If you have any water coming into it, let's say there's a creek feeding this, or you have it entering any, whatever feeds this body of water, there's always something, right? Whether it could be a matter of there's an underground spring. I'm going to focus it in adjacent areas that are feeding this thing water in the early season, right? I think, Danny, a big opportunity for something like this, obviously they still probably have the ice on there. You know, once we do crack into spring in Iowa, you have the opportunity, if you're fishing from the bank, you have that same access to a really good shallow water bite, because those muskies are going to spawn and they're going to shove up extremely shallow. So at that point,
I'd be looking, obviously this is a man-made system, but I would be looking for somewhere to confine them, whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, in front of a dam, mm-hmm. below the dam,
yeah.
some sort of neck down area, something mm-hmm. where you're not relying on just one random fish to swim right. along the shoreline as much as, you know, a travel corridor, right?
Right.
Or say you have no neck down in this lake. Look at your mapping of it. And see mm-hmm. where the creek channel runs closest to the bank. Some sort of channel swing, some sort of any sort of contour that these fish are going to use as a highway
mm-hmm.
closest to the bank. That's where you're going to want to be, so you're not relying on just dumb luck and one random fish being there. You're trying to find some sort of
right.
runway
right.
where you have the opportunity. If there's nothing there when you're there, at least you have a chance at a fish swimming by at some point in time while
during
you're fishing
day.
There.
Right. And that there, like, it's structure fishing, but confined to the bank. You still have to
exactly.
understand what's taking place there. You still have to, again, identify, you know, structure. Is there, like you said, a neck down? Are you, when you're fishing from the bank, are you fishing over the shallow section? Are you fishing near a deeper section? You know, because that can change staging. Even on an 80-foot cast from the bank, if you're, say, adjacent to a deep hole in the lake, you know, the difference between your bait landing in 6 feet of water on an 80-foot cast or landing in 15 feet of water on an 80-foot cast is monumental, right?
So exactly.
You've got all the same things that we need to consider: structure, seasonality, And you're just positioning yourself in a different way. And then, you know, get on that spring bike, get up on the north end, whatever the north end of that lake is going to get the most sun. You know, something to consider, Dan, especially you got timber. We got big wind, he says. We have milfoil. I mean, frustrating from...
I would be fishing early time of year. I wouldn't be fishing wind. I'd be fishing the leeward side just because that's where the warmest water is going to be.
Yep. Absolutely.
The sun's going to warm it up more.
Yeah. Get on. Well, if it is big wind, you know, get on that. Really pay attention. Like you were saying, pay attention to what's happening, you know, in that system as much as you would... You know, if you're thinking from the standpoint of just an angler, don't change the approach. You need to understand structure, the whole bit. Presentation wise, you know, I think a lot of guys, when you're throwing from the bank or something like that, they're afraid to throw snaggy or deeper running baits. You know, that's something like if you're going to throw, say, like a bulldog, or you're going to throw a tube, or you're going to throw rubber or something of that nature, taking the hooks and putting them on the top of the bait. I've done that, you know, fishing streams. I used to, they can't get them anymore. Caught top loading a toad. You know, there's some tricks there. So thinking that, Dan from Slimelander. He said, I stopped by the Smitty booth at the Michigan show. You should have seen the wide array of Smitty shanks, beautiful painted wooden handles. Beautiful hand painted wooden shanks. The Smitties had the crazy look in their eye. So he's gone and visited the Smitties, right? Who are sorry. This is what you got to see when you're on here. This is what you got to suffer through. All right. TOOD says, spinnerbait mods and yo-yoing. What is your description of yo-yoing a spinnerbait? Is it vertical jigging a spinnerbait or casting out and pull up, pausing, you know, similar to a bulldog? Also, do you have any, what? Oh, any, espad? I have no clue what that word means because I don't speak Spanish no good. But anyway, so let's differentiate between yo-yoing, jigging, casting. So spinnerbaits, live and die by them. One of my favorite things ever here. Yo-yoing is a cast and a hop, right? It's kind of the origination of what I believe a tube retrieve looks like, right? So it's up and you let it fall. So a yo-yoing is it's on the cast, it hits the water, you let it fall, then you pull it up, pick up the slack, let it fall, pull it up. That's a yo-yo in my mind, right? Vertical jigging, which, you know, before we had Bondis everywhere, before we had primarily driven bait classes of vertical jigs for muskies, I've yo-yoed the hell out of spinner baits, you know, on channels, edges, and ledges, and shell beds, and all this different stuff. Where yo-yoing a spinner bait can be, a spinner bait can be dynamite. But I'm doing it in the same fashion that you would do, like a Bondi, where it's just lift and lower. So yo-yoing in my mind is the cast. We're lifting and letting it fall, lifting and letting it fall. And jigging is the same as vertical jigging. But he does say like a pull pause, right? So you have like the Steve's tailgate or the spinnerbait I did with Figure Eight, which is intentionally designed around a couple of these techniques, where if you're fishing shallow, snaggy water, I'll use the tailgater as a pull pause bait, not really as a traditional, you know, spinner bait, because you have all the properties of a pull pause bait with a big pulse and a controlled fall, but you don't have the snag problems of treble hooks. Danny, what's your take? At least in my mind, the yo-yo is to throw it out and pull it up and let it fall, kind of like a tube retrieve.
Yeah. And I mean, like, they're like up here, we throw them. They are a majorly overlooked bait. Like, but one thing when you are yo-yoing a spinner bait, it has to be, in my opinion, it can't be just a normal spinner bait that you're yo-yoing. They're not weighted heavily enough. So a lot of the really good yo-yo spinner baits are like the trolling spinner baits that have, like, there we're talking ounce and a half, 2 ounce type heads, or a lot of them will have, you know, lead up by where, you know, you clip on the spinner bait, so you can actually get them down and, you know, work them and yo-yo them and have a, you know, a fast fall versus if you're trying to yo-yo with just a conventional musky spinner bait, you know, in my opinion, most of them are just meant to be fished fairly shallow in heavy cover. So there is a specific spinner bait, you know, in my opinion, to be yo-yoing, one that is built much heavier than a traditional shallow water spinner bait. And like when I'm doing it, I'm generally, you know, throwing it up and visualizing the structure I am, and you're basically, you're not necessarily making bottom contact, but you're walking it down that ledge, pumping it down that ledge, and then like when I get, you know, your rod gets at probably, I don't know, a 30 degree angle where the bait's maybe, you know, 30 feet away from the boat, I don't continue to yo-yo and pump up to the boat. I just wind it really fast, almost, you know, straight up, and then start the figure eight. It's not just a pump and pump and pump and reel all the way to the boat. I'm pumping it down the structure. When I get to where I feel like the structure is flattening out, then I'm increasing my speed all the way back to the boat.
Whackety
schmackety. And then into the figure eight.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's spot on. And the thing I'd say is this, though, is like with the structure, it, you know, when you're to go into like that 2 ounce, it depends on where they're at, though, just a smidge. You know what I'm saying? Where if you're down here, you can sometimes get away with like 1.5 ounces, right?
Depends on the depth that you're wanting to fish. Now, I wouldn't be yo-yoing a spinner bait if I was fishing 3 to 6 feet. You know what I mean? Then I would just be, I would be just reeling and
you're missing, you know, the juice,
eating up my reel. I would consider like yo-yoing with deeper structure. You know what I mean? Yeah. A deeper presentation is how I would consider working a spinnerbait where you're yo-yoing it. You know what I mean?
The trick. Definitely getting into like this time of year here as we go on, like, you know, shallow flats bites, if you will, for just a generic term, like post spawn flats, is everybody and their brothers throwing a rattle trap or they're throwing small blades, right? And that speed over the shallow zones will work, but the trick can be literally just hopping and bopping those shallow flats like that. As that's a kind of, you know what I'm saying, but it's a different timing, you know, basically where you're going to have those different fish there. Grant, hey fellas, love the podcast. My question is, for when you have two or more guys in the boat, can you talk about pairing baits together like a 1-2 punch? I typically work faster moving steady retrieve up front, i.e. bucktail, swim baits, etc., followed by slower moving baits in the back, jerk baits, or rubber with success. However, are there any combos that you've seen work paired well together that break the typical mold and get fish to react? Ooh, this is a good one for the two of us on here, buddy. Because we're great in the boat together. We just crush. We suck when we fish together. But anyway, primarily my fault. This is God talk here. How we pairing baits? What's your thought?
Well, that has, I mean, seasonality wise has a lot to do with it, right? You know, but like the way he described what he's doing is, you know, pretty bang on for, you know, early season summer patterns. That's, you know, generally my approach. Now, the only other thing that I have done is, you know, as the season gets a little later, you're having a guy in the bow of the boat throwing like a crankbait or some sort of rubber, and you're having the guy in the back of the boat vertical jigging. You know, pumping a bondi, pumping a tube below the boat. If you're not running live bait, obviously, or even if you are running live bait, I've seen days where, you know, I've had an older gentleman in the boat that can't cast and I am running a sucker. So I just have him, you know, jig a tube, jig a bondi below the boat and actually caught, you know, more fish than the live bait. One bait that I've done very well with people that can't work baits, actually, believe it or not, as under slow speeds, is that Savage Gear Burbot. That thing looks alive at 0.8 miles an hour with little to no effort. And I've caught, had clients catch a ton of fish that are, you know, older, can't work a bait, and you want, you know, another rod in the water, obviously. So I just plop that down, get it about 3 feet off bottom, and have him pump it every once in a while. And I've had a lot of fish eat that that have went over, looked at the sucker, and came over and bit that for some reason.
Yeah. It's got that savage gear magic.
So other than, you know, other than having your conventional, you know, guy in the front throwing something generally straight, fast, you know, top water, bucktail, that type of stuff, and in the back, you know, having a guy throwing rubber or crankbait or jerkbait, I mean, he's pretty bang on with the tried and true, you know?
Yeah. The only time I deviate quite a bit as far as, like, based on the day quite often, but I mean, if the, you know, I, it depends on like the moon bite too. Like this year, you and I were talking early in the season where it's like, it's bang on moon, right? You were like, okay, I think you started off the season like it's 15 minutes before, right? And I will make adjustments in my game plan throughout the year based on known bite windows, because I will often start with somebody, whether it be me or somebody that is in the front of the boat that is throwing something slow. So trying to coax fish up with a faster bait in the back, right? So maybe that guy's on blades or a shallow crank, maybe a shallow invader or just something basic like double eights. And that might be a Titan or a Suic or a tube, trying to get these fish up and engaged when it's like that outside the bite windows, right? Trying to get that coax up or that look up where quite often, you know, they kind of fire off, they're going, and try to do that while anticipating when that window is. You know what I'm saying? So I always have that hot bait, or not hot bait, but a quicker moving pace wet. So we're catching those fish that might have not quite got the memo. They're acting the same as they are inside of the bite windows, but they didn't get the memo of when to act that way, while kind of leading with something, I guess, a little bit different or a little bit different presentation on those off bite hours, right? So let's say this fish got pummeled by two other guides during the major. Leading into that fish with something a little bit different has paid off for me of being able to pull them up. You know what I'm saying? Like if they're getting pummeled or it's like fishing a community spot in between like a hot bite, that's probably one of the odder things. It's funny you say that about hanging something by your tube. I mean, that's kind of shocking how well that works. What's the smallest stuff you've done in complement to a tube? Are you just doing the burbot in like a 10 inch tube?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm up here, like, you know, my it's different. Big, my forage base is big, right?
It's just like for me a couple times there, it's been like following up, you know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, they come in and they're checking out the sucker, but here's like the menace, you know, or here's a small bait and that's enough to get them going. You know, kind of on a, like you said, a jig thing or something of that nature. I think something that's interesting, though, and it's not quite in his question, but something you and I talk about that a lot of people don't discuss is playing to people's strengths in the boat, however, though, right?
100%.
Where this guy's question, like you said, it's spot on. That's how you should probably configure your boat most of the time. But the guide thought process is, okay, assessing for the first hour and going, sometimes you got to reorganize the boat. Sometimes you need to move people around, right? Because like you said, you might have somebody that you don't want to put grandpa up front on double tens on the July full moon bite. You know what I'm saying? He's going to probably pooch all of them. And so if I have, let's see, I got two guys in the boat. I'm looking on hot bites, you know, not hot bites, but I'm freaking, like I was saying, whether once we're dialed in, we know what that bite's going to be. We know it's whatever, sunset, moon, pick your poison, whatever it's going to be. When I'm in that headset, I want to make sure I got the right guy with the right bait. Sometimes I'll move boat positioning, but also too, Danny, there's a certain thing of like, you can't have the guy that doesn't have the best boat legs up in the nose of the boat and it's rough and windy, right? But he might be the better angler. Yeah,
exactly. And I mean, like, as a guide too, like, there might be, not only do we have to match the person with the right bait, we have to match the right type of structure we're fishing, mm-hmm. with the right client. Because, like, I've had guys where, you know, the bait is in the weeds. Well, the clients can't fish a bait through the weeds, and every cast you're bringing up 10 feet of cabbage. Mm-hmm. So I'm forced to find, you know, fish out, you know, out deeper off rocks and stuff like that where I'm not fighting weeds.
Yeah.
So there is, you know, like you said, the main thing is learning your strengths and your weaknesses as an angler and where you excel to be the most productive on the water.
Right.
You know, and two, like, okay, maybe it's a jerkbait bite. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you are, you know, and let's face it, some people aren't as coordinated as others.
Yes.
When it comes to
anything.
Like, I mean, it's a fact of life. And okay, yeah. That's what they're biting. This is how it's going to be now. And you know, you're not very good at it. Pick that bait up and throw it till you're good at it. You know,
yeah,
you don't necessarily have to be throwing it when fishing's hot. Pick it up when it's kind of a dull time of the day and just take an hour and learn how to work that bait effectively. That way, when fishing is kicking in and the fish are biting, you can throw
bait properly
and effectively to get a bite.
I think that is, and I know you're going to agree, but probably the most underutilized thing of what we both do is people taking advantage of that. Because, again, obviously people want to catch a fish. I get it. But a lot of times it's like sitting there, you're in the guy that, in the boat with the guy that makes all the Savage Gear stuff. Danny knows, you know, those products inside and out. The same goes for me at Livingston. Know the product. I know what they'll do. I made the damn thing. He made, okay. So have a pretty deep understanding of the baits, and then much less being on the water going, these are the retrieves that get the bites. Because, I mean, a lot of it's like, not many guys in the muskie game, they focus on buying baits, right? That's the thing. If I buy this bait, I'll catch muskies. If you buy that bait and you use it the same way that you use all the other baits, you're not going to get the bites. And I, you know, it's
exactly.
Like, it shocks me at times where, you know, obviously the trip is to go catch a muskie. Got it. Check. We're going to try our damnedest, but maybe sometimes it's better to forego that or tell, hey, Danny, can we focus on an hour on going through the tackle box and you show me what works? Right?
Well, and two, like, yeah, oh, for sure. And I mean, and let's face it, if you have confidence in a bait and you know you can throw a bait, you're better and throw it effectively and well, you're better off clipping that bait on,
mm-hmm.
and leaving it on till you find the right fish that'll eat that bait.
Yeah, that's
versus going through every bait in your tackle box,
uh-huh.
when you're not working it effectively and a fish comes in and, you know, you get to the boat and you're not doing what needs to be done with it. You're better off throwing fishing confidence and fishing a bait that you can fish right. Because when a fish does engage that bait, you're able to get it to bite.
But to that point, you're not wrong, but everyone stops at bucktails. Therein lies the problem from a guide perspective. Is, I mean, dude, you know it, I know it, just cut the shit, which is like, okay, give me, if you're like competent, I mean, you don't have to be guide level with any of this shit, but it's just like, you got to get away from. That's why I'm always banging about it. You know what I'm saying? I throw blades. You throw blades, but it's just like that can't be the only game in
that's
town.
No, it can't be. But that's why, like, for instance, that I'm not going to try and beat on Savage's drum. But that's why we put all those little modifications to that bucktail with the clip-on weights and stuff like that. That yes, it is a bucktail, but you can fish it more than just a conventional bucktail. Right. You can fish it deeper. You can fish it shallower.
Right.
You can, you know, take the twister off the back. Like, you know what I mean? You can put a paddle tail. Like, you can fish it. Yeah, it is a bucktail, but it gives you a little bit more flexibility than just, like, a regular bucktail with a 3/8 ounce sinker. Like,
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, you can do more. And, yeah, like you said, you got to formulate around your thing because, I mean, if you look at it with all the bait classes, and I've told people this before, I think the most important thing you can do to grow as a muskie angler is try to focus one season, right? Let's say you're fishing, you got your weekends, right? We got the week. Hell, let's line it up here. We'll be able to do it off the top of our head. We're fishing northern Wisconsin, which you know it like the back of your hand. I know it like the back of my hand, right? We're a northern Wisconsin guy or wherever the hell you're at. It doesn't matter. It's important and probably the best thing you can do for one season if you're just trying to do it, make your goal to catch a muskie on one of each type of bait, right? So you've probably already got your bucktail fish knocked out. Why don't you start that season and go, I'm going to catch my first crankbait fish, right? Skip the part and get that learning because, like, that's the one thing is everybody fixates on, I'm just going to go out here and does what works. You know, everybody else is catching on blades, but for the longevity of your muskie fishing, I think if you kind of went through the tackle box and said, well, I've never caught a fish on X, Y, and Z. You hear it all the time. I hear it all the time. I've never caught a fish on rubber, right? Or I've never caught a fish on diving riser. I've never caught a fish trolling. Or I've never caught a fish on, you know, a glide bait. I think that would be a huge advantage for people if you would just go, all right, let me get comfortable and confident. And once you have a fish where you go, yeah, I've caught a fish on that. I've caught a fish on that. Much, you know, not on the baits by name, but baits by classes, right? I think that's a huge boost, wouldn't you say, Danny?
Oh, for sure. I mean, the more... And once you start throwing all these different baits, you start to learn the little nuances that trigger the bites.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing is like, I don't care if you're fishing wildcat and you've never caught glide bait fish. You've never caught one. And you're on this, the trigger mechanism is the same, right? A muskie is most likely to hit a 30-inch muskie on wildcat is most likely to hit that thing on the paws as we're getting away from covering structure, and he thinks that bait's getting away from him into open water, and he's going to do the same damn thing if we're on Eagle or Lagoon or Luxel, right? He's going to do the same thing. So sometimes it's beneficial to learn that trigger or go, okay, I've got the right cadence because I'm getting eats and follows on high-density water, right? And then you take that and extrapolate it to, you can extrapolate it to your Canada trip, or you can extrapolate it to a big reservoir or whatever the hell you're fishing. Because, you know, I love it probably when and I know you've done it, I've done it. I think probably between me and you, we probably caught more people their first tube style bait fish than a lot of people, right? How many people did, once the bourbon tube came out of the crack and came out, it's like, that's my first tube fish. And, you know, and it's just like, I mean, I know for a fact, I know I did, and I know you did. We probably spent, I mean, probably threw that style of bait too much. If you don't know Danny, if you guys, there's so many people don't know the backstory, but Danny made the Burbot tube at Savage. I made the Kraken, and pretty much this came out relatively the same time, you know, in the same window. It's just like living and dying and breathing by those baits. But I mean, once they get that under their belt, it's like lights out, game on, right? And you know, what do you think? I mean, what other stuff, Danny? What we're sitting here banging brains. What else do you want to see in the guide boat, or what else is like, okay, this is a net positive for your overall fishing?
Oh boy. Well, the main thing is just like I said, spending the time learning how to work what bait you're going to throw properly versus clipping on everything in the tackle box and expecting just a magic bait to appear. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, spending the time and making sure you have the right equipment for the rod you're going to throw, for the bait you're going to throw. You know, just mm-hmm. because you have a bulldog in the boat doesn't mean you have the right equipment to match that bait.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, like, when you're buying all this stuff, make sure you have the proper stuff to actually throw the bait you're buying.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, another thing that I would say is an important factor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. You got to have the right gear. You just got to have the right gear. I mean, I know... I'm definitely a one rod guy, try to keep it simple, but what are your hangups on gear, Danny?
I mean, if a guy was going out, your average angler, and buying one rod to do everything and one reel to do everything, which is mm-hmm. honestly, it's pretty doable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of options out there now. And I mean, if a guy buys, you know, an 8-6, or a 9-foot, depending on the brand, mind you now,
mm-hmm.
heavy power or extra, probably I would say a heavy power 9-foot, or if you're going to go to an 8-6, make sure you get an extra heavy
mm-hmm.
and get, you know, a gear ratio reel in that high fives
yeah.
that you can still crank a big blade on, but yet you can still move it fast enough, work rubber on. Yeah. I would say you're pretty bang on and able mm-hmm. to do everything. Now you can get real specialized and you can buy, you know, like I personally like to throw a 7-10 or an 8-foot extra heavy on like my jerk bait type stuff, like mm-hmm. my crankbait and stuff like that. And then, whoa. You know, once I get into rubber, I don't get real hung up on super crazy long
hey,
rods.
Danny,
I'm always in back of the boat.
Danny, can you hear me?
Yeah.
We are getting some crazy weird interference there. So you were saying the 7-10. Just say that again because we got some weird interference there.
Hold on. I put you on speaker holding my fucking... So there, okay. Can you hear me better
yeah,
now?
Way better. But what with the 7-10?
Yeah, so I like, you know, like if you want to get really specialized and you want to have, you know, a rod and a reel for everything out there, you know, like get yourself a 7-10 for like your crankbaits and jerkbait stuff. It allows you to just, you know, really short, fast, hard twitches to get that bait to move.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you can jump up and then, you know, once you get into that 9-foot category, then you're pretty set for, you know, bucktails and rubber and stuff like that. Yeah. But you know, I mean, for an average everyday angler, 8-6 or 9-foot will cover pretty much every application yeah. out there.
I'm always of the school of less is more because people overthink it. But the one thing you and I 100% agree on is reel speed. Oh, you know, it's just like 5'3", 5'8", somewhere in that, you know, in that neighborhood, because it's just like so often guys go berserker. I don't know what your policy is. You know, I'm definitely like, don't bring reels on my boat. Because it seems like it's the guy that's got the 8, you know, he's got a 8-9 to 9 or something just insane, you know. Reel, I mean.
Yeah, I'm not real hung up on the crazy high speed reels. I think it hurts an angler more than it helps an angler.
Yeah.
Just because it takes a lot of training to work a really high speed reel. And fish a bait effectively, especially like your jerk style baits. You're not getting that pausing type action and you're not allowing the bait to move because you're not giving it any slack with a crazy high speed reel.
Right. They're never letting it fall or never letting it pause.
And yeah.
That's it. that I think fundamentally, and I argue with other anglers and clients about it, they're like, trust me, you know, because it was like, we went from that 5-3-1, which is the baseline with your Abus and your Calcuttas, right? Somewhere in that neighborhood. And then we got the 6-3-1. We had to have that for ripping rubber. And then everybody's picked up these high-speed reels, and it keeps going up and up and up and up from there. And, you know, I think that's one of, like you said, one of the most detrimental things you can do, because, it's, you know, speed just kills. I mean, it just does over, like, you're talking about Danny's working a bait like crazy. He's working it really, really hard, but on a, not like I'd say a slow retrieve, but I mean, you're not picking it up to the point where it's pulling up in the air. And that's what it like, or pulling up in the water comes. Well, I see guys, they reel with the fast reel, they reel all the way through the slack and then they pull the bait up before they work it again. Right. So they've picked up the slack and they've pulled the bait on the reel opposed to the whole point. That's, I think the most, and it's like the thing that screws you up more than anything in muskie fishing, I think to if you want to distill it down, it's not having the right bait, right? So there's always a fish that'll eat something, and it's not, you know, always a location thing. If you're in the right general area, it's just like not overworking, but speeding through the retrieve, speeding through the, you know, everybody has this vision in their head of here's a mighty muskie jumping out of the lake with an aardvark in its mouth, right? Doing a cartwheel. They want that speed hit. They want that crazy follow. You know what I'm saying? Where a lot of, I mean, how many of your bites are just right there on the fall? They're right there on the paws, and he just kind of takes it. You know, it's not that dramatic.
Well, I mean, out of a whole season of guiding, you know, there's only a handful of fish that came in like just
doing the thing.
Dixie, like, yeah. just like wild.
Yeah.
There's only a handful of them out of a whole season that do that.
Yep.
You know, a lot of the reason the fish is following is because you haven't tripped its trigger for the most part.
Yeah.
So that's, you know what I mean? And they're not coming in just
unglued,
seeing red.
Yeah. So, it's so rare.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is. Especially, I mean, this day and age. Like, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it used to happen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, let's not to go down this rabbit hole, but let's face it. I mean, muskies are getting tougher and tougher to catch just because they're getting more and more educated. So you're having to be a better angler on a daily basis to catch these fish. So that's why, like, all these little things that we're preaching right now all make a big difference when it comes to catching numbers of fish and not relying on just getting super lucky and catching one fish.
Right. And yeah, it's, couldn't say it better. It's what you, and it's really what you want versus the reality of the situation. You know, what you want is an angler. And you can't blame a guy, Danny, for wanting to throw out a freaking Big Mac or a sucker prop or a top rater. Throw it out, turn the handle as fast as you can, and wait for the water to fly everywhere. That's what we want.
I mean, I've seen that happen, and right. It does happen. But
not enough to guide
it's
on.
It's not all that common.
Yeah.
It's not an everyday occurrence.
That's,
you know what I mean?
It's not a pattern either. It's not.
No.
Activity. It's oh God, not to go down the rabbit hole too bad, but like, you know, I'm finishing another book here, and it's like talking about activity level, and I've not even talked to you about this, but like activity level is rarely patternable between individual fish. You know what I'm saying? Like each fish, they might come in a general mood, but there's like, let's say you're out there in open water and it's scope. So what? I'll talk about it. You see a bunch of fish on scope and you do this and you throw a bait at it and it doesn't move. And then there's one that just comes unglued. You know what I'm saying? Not every fish, they might have the same general staging. They might have the same general, you know, metabolism, but they're not the activity level per fish is not patternable.
Fish are like people. You got some fish that are just, you know, overall crowd is in the same mood, but then there's always that one twitchy son of a gun over in the corner over there that's always talking his ear off, talking your ear off. You know what I mean?
I know somebody
and
that, like
I mean,
that.
And ultimately that is fishing. That is musky fishing. We are looking for that one fish outside of, you know, a weather front or moon that is not hip to the program.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing out there. You're running numbers, and it's a numbers game. The more fish you can encounter, the better your chances are of finding that one that is that twitchy guy in the corner.
Yeah. You got to get in front of enough of them to get to eat. And I have my days where it's like, okay, I know what my baseline, like, guide number is for home water, and I know what, you know it too. It's like, okay, if I get in front of six, I'm going to get one of six. You know, like, seeing them come in on live scope now, and, just, you know, these are not, like, visual follows. These are engagements. Yeah, it's true. Let me pick your brain on this, because I'll tell you what, Danny. If there was anything that was made abundantly clear this weekend, right? Because I'm standing there at the Classic. Everybody's focused on what's happening at the Classic. Buddy, it was, if you ain't scoping, you're hoping. It was crazy. Those boys, you know, you got a Japanese guy and a couple young guns glued to the screen. They got 16-inch live scopes up there, and just that was the difference. Holy cow, you know, of you know, talk about a different world right now. I know they're going to make some changes next year with the elites, where it's like different event, you know, different applications. But, you know, that is so true. And what I'm getting at is, like, seeing it with those guys where they're on bass and they were doing the same thing, where it's like, okay, there's a school and there's the one. But, you know, what's your take, not to get too down on it, I mean, what's your take on pressure and scope? Because I know it's something that you deal with.
It's, you know, it's not good. You know, the problem is, you know, I get it. People are traveling a long ways to fish these fish, and it's their one time a year to fish these fish. But it's realizing when enough is enough and to leave the fish alone. Mm-hmm. You know, I have nothing against scope. I have everything against people. It comes down to harassment of fish. Mm-hmm. And it's, if you could teach everybody how to use it, you know, responsibly, mm-hmm. I don't think scope would be a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, and I use it just as much for learning. You know, yeah, I'm on the same lake day in, day out, but yep. Like, I find new structures because of it. I find where fish hold because of it. And, you know, it's a very good learning tool. Now, if, you know, people would just learn to, okay, this fish is too deep. It's, you know, in potential harm. I'm not going to fish it. Mm-hmm. Okay, this fish has seen my bait, engaged my bait. He wants nothing to do with eating a bait. I'm going to forget about him and just move on. That's perfectly fine. Yeah. But when you're chasing, you know, following a fish for 2-3, you know, an hour, 2 hours, throwing every bait in the book, you know, that's why we're seeing these fish shying away from boats. Yeah. There's studies saying that they can't hear forward facing sonar. Okay. Maybe they can't hear your sonar, but they can hear the presence of your boat, and they're associating that negative impact of that bait bugging them time after time after time again. And they're hearing your trolling motor. They're hearing you talk. They're hearing, you know, you step around in the boat. They're hearing all those things that are associating. It's a negative impact. It's a negative experience. So they're learning to avoid us as anglers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a different world. It's so strange, you know, where you go.
And I mean, you know, in 10 years from now, what is it going to be?
I don't
know. You know, that's what scares me.
I don't
know. You know, it's scaring me as a guide, as a fisherman that loves the resource. Mm-hmm. I protect it with my best of ability, and I try and treat each fish, you know, the best that I can and take the best care of it. But in 10 years, what's going to happen if we don't start to be very responsible with it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
You know, it's never going away.
No, Genie doesn't go back in the bottle. I mean, Garmin just came out. Dude, literally, I'm at the show and Garmin is like announcing, Bob sent it to me, and then they were downstairs in a big room. It's like, the sniper pole. Right?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's here. It's never going away. We just need to learn to use it effectively. I mean, what it's coming down to is management of the resource now, is what it's coming down to.
Spy pole, excuse me. The spy pole. But, yeah, I mean, there's, like, out in the lobby, sniper marine, right? I mean, I'm not knocking anything. There's a million companies where it's just, like, and if you watch the Bass Guys, you know, I run mine. I have it pointed down for figure eights, right? It's pointed to the side. I can see them if they're falling a bait and all this fun stuff. And I've got a second one. I'm watching the edge. And it's like, it's scary watching the young guns on that bass circuit. Where it's like, it's just on the trolling motor firing shots. Whack, whack, whack. You know, and then seeing that where that entire show, there's plenty of products dedicated to pure sharpshooting. Right? That's like, okay. Yeah. And I know what you're saying, where it's like, you know, we don't have, again, I'm trying to be agnostic on that, on this subject as much as possible at all times. Cause I find myself, you know, how do I put it? At times you contradict yourself no matter what you do or say on the subject, right? Where, you know, I love it for this, but I don't do it for that. But you can't pass judgment because somebody does it in a way that you don't approve, right? So it's not about right or wrong. It's about usage. It's about, you know, how am I going to stifle? If you like doing it that way, who am I to say that's wrong? When I, you know what I'm saying? It's like usage. But I definitely, to be honest with you, I definitely was kind of taken aback about, from the Classic, how much of the product that I saw and how much of the conversation was about sniping. Right?
Yep.
I mean, it just won a kid $300,000 yesterday.
Yep.
What is everybody, what are you going to do? You know what I'm saying? And it's like you said, in 10 years, you think about growing up. It's like, here I'm getting to hang with Rowan and KVD and talk to those guys, where I'm going, okay, those are structure guys. Those are crankbait guys. You know what I'm saying? Like power fishing and just structure and all this stuff. So, yeah, you're right to kind of look at it in the long run where you go, okay, what is that going to look like? And I think from the muskie front is, here we got fish that are living 20-plus years, and that conditioning. I know the conditioning's real. I know that. Like Dr. Bob had told me at one point, I guess there's this ongoing study in Minnesota about mortality and live scope and how they're being targeted. I got that. I got all that. But from a conditioning standpoint, it's like it is there getting conditioned to this. You know, and I've even on the podcast over the years, I've talked to you about it. I've talked to your dad about it. I've commented on it with seeing it at home. You know, this, that, and the other, where you go, okay, there's some that know what's going on, right? There just are. Whether they can hear it or not, something's odd, right? It's a little bit, it's a little bit different. And I mean, I don't know if you said on the podcast, but you and I think you and I talked about it just when we're just calling each other, like about you're taking away that place where they hide, where they, where they have a refuge, or where maybe one, I mean, cause there's never been that many trollers. If you really think, how many people do you see that come to Eagle Lake or go on a trip and they just straight troll?
Not till it gets cold, generally.
Not till it gets cold. So here's this area that's really not hit, because if you think about it, for years and years and years and years and years, you had Grandpa and a ranger just casting and blasting a bucktail at the weeds waiting for him to show up. So who knows? I don't have the answer. So that's why I'll shut up about it. But again,
none of us have the answer. That's the great thing with muskie fishing, is we can only give guidance. We don't have the direct answer. There is no right or wrong way, unfortunately.
And sometimes it's guess. Instead of guidance, it's guessance. I'm coining that term. Try that. And sometimes it pans out. Well, Danny, thank you for filling in for Jay. I'm sure he will recover from his 3D gerbil injury soon. Send your checks and money orders to JSE. He's care of the Muskie Shop. Folks, we're taking, we got to GoFundMe. Anyway, good.
Oh, great.
I've got to make you do it. Danny, say goodnight.
Good times, man.
All right, later.
Take it easy.